Today we are entering a world that many of us will never witness, the stunningly beautiful world of coral reefs. Like tropical birds underwater, corals are strange, incredible, and, as we will learn today, critical in the overall ecology of the oceans. And they are as threatened as so many other ecosystems and animals today. Chasing coral. An emotional journey under the ocean's surface. That's our topic here today on An Organic Conversation, your show on everything that makes life worth living. I'm Helge Hellberg. If you're not a diver, there are not too many opportunities to see corals up close. Perhaps in an aquarium, you can get a glimpse of their colors and beauty. But anyone who has had a chance to dive through a coral reef often speaks of it as if it was an outer world experience. Imagine a gigantic field of spring flowers with the most intense, radiant, and even fluorescent colors. A tropical bird sanctuary underwater. Corals are animals, and they are a critical part of the ecosystem of the oceans, just as they are threatened, as so many other species of animals, by environmental degradation. We now have a chance to see this amazing underwater world up close and personal, thanks to a new documentary, Chasing Coral. All that and more coming up in just a minute, here today on An Organic Conversation. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and this show is made possible by Equal Exchange, a worker-owned cooperative that ensures your food is environmentally sound and socially just. Equal Exchange has been creating big change for small farmers for over 30 years by offering certified organic and fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, bananas, and avocados. More on Equal Exchange at equalexchange.coop. That's equalexchange.coop. And by Udderly, offering beautiful and fun clothing for boys and girls that is made entirely from the unused fabric of prominent apparel manufacturers. Each garment reduces our eco-footprint by preventing this fabric from reaching the waste stream. Udderly, making sustainability fashionable and fashion sustainable. For more information, udderly.co. That's UTTERLY.CO. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. Chasing Coral, an emotional journey under the ocean's surface. That's our topic here today in this hour as we are diving into a world that most of us will never be able to witness. The strange and beautiful and critically important world of coral. And on the phone with me now is Richard Wevers, the founder and CEO of the Ocean Agency. That's theoceanagency.org, which he founded in Sydney, Australia. And he will be the person to dive with us into this topic because the oceans are his second home. Richard, do we have you on the line?
Absolutely. And it's great to be talking to you today.
Yes, thank you for making the time and being not diving right now, but actually on the heart, so to say. There is a world of beauty and critical importance under the surface of our oceans. What makes reefs so special? Can you give us the first framework of your fascination with it?
Well, I've always loved the ocean from a very, very early age, but really it was when I headed to Australia back in the year sort of 2000 and started diving on reefs, on the Great Barrier Reef, you just jump in the water there and you are blown away by the amount of life. I mean, it is truly incredible. People often sort of look at safari parks in Africa or the Amazon jungle, but for me, the biodiversity you find on a coral reef is second to none. And especially when you dive on the far north of the Great Barrier Reef, it was one of the most incredible places on the planet.
Well, how did you become interested in this topic? What was the moment it grabbed your attention so much that, or your care so much that you said, I will dedicate most likely the rest of my life to exploring it, to exposing it in a way that people understand it and care for it themselves and protect it with that?
Well, my journey actually sort of really started actually in Sydney. I was doing a lot of diving in Sydney, and there was this one animal which was called a weedy sea dragon, and it was my favorite animal that I'd try and find when diving. And then over sort of a few years, they all sort of disappeared around Sydney, and no one seemed to know the reason why. And that really sort of piqued my interest in what was going on with the ocean, and I started working with a lot of conservation organizations at that stage. And you realize that there's so much happening underwater that really is going on out of sight and out of mind. And I have a background in advertising, and I really saw that as an advertising issue. So I then decided to pull a team of ex-advertisers together to set up a not-for-profit organization. And our idea was to reveal the oceans to the world. So take Google Street View underwater. Mm-hmm. And that really is the project that led into a massive survey of coral reefs and a true love of coral reefs that I've developed over the last few years.
And this little dragon that you're describing, I've had the chance to watch the film Chasing Coral, which is now available on Netflix, and it's an absolute must-see. It's this foot-long or maybe foot-and-a-half long, completely out-of-this-world, alien, colorful, gigantic seahorse that it looks so absurd, so absurdly beautiful, but it's almost a fantasy creature, right?
Absolutely. And the amazing thing is they live on one of the most famous beaches in the world, Bondi Beach, and yet most people that have ever been to Bondi Beach in Sydney have never been underwater diving and have never seen these creatures and don't even know they exist. And I think that just really sort of sums up our sort of lack of engagement with the ocean. Something like 99.9% of people don't dive and will never dive. So it is a huge challenge really trying to get people engaged with these underwater environments.
Yeah, so when you speak of an advertisement challenge, 70% of the world's surface is water, our oceans, and we depend on that environment, and yet it is so little understood and known, and it is so little part of our everyday life as we are making policy. So we talk about storms or climate change or weather patterns on land, of course, but really what's going on under the surface of the oceans, as you said, is vastly undocumented, and that's changing now. Why did you start the Ocean Agency? Like, what was the core idea to bring that, to make it visible, to bring the status of the world's oceans to a larger audience?
Yes, well, I mean, originally we saw the challenge was to engage the world with the oceans as much as we possibly could. And there was the technology available to do that with Google mm-hmm. and Google Maps. So we teamed up with Google and decided to take Street View underwater. And we developed these cameras that would allow us to record underwater environments in exactly the same way that Google Street View cars do above water. So we invented this camera that we could mount on an underwater scooter and drive through underwater environments, taking 360-degree shots every 3 seconds, which would then allow people to explore these environments and be able to see change over time because we revisit sites. And we thought at that stage that that would be enough to sort of really provide the conservation organisations with the way to engage a sort of larger audience with some of these issues. But during this process, we discovered that the issues were far, far worse than we ever imagined as a team. And we've been working with some of the world's leading scientists over the last few years, really discovering those. And that's sort of driven us to really sort of grow the project into much more of a science and conservation initiative.
We are speaking with Richard Wevers, the founder and CEO of the Ocean Agency. That's theoceanagency.org out of Sydney, Australia, who's speaking with us about the status of the oceans and particularly coral reefs as part of a new film that's available on Netflix right now. It's called Chasing Coral. In this hour of an organic conversation, Chasing Coral, an emotional journey under the ocean's surface. Richard, when you talk about it was much worse, what was worse? What have you found? What's going on? What's the status of the oceans, or particularly what's the status of the world's reefs?
Well, what I didn't realize when we started this project was how quickly the world's reefs are declining. At the start, we decided we would change the project from just not just revealing underwater environments, but to create a record at the same time. So we teamed up with the University of Queensland, and we started recording reefs on a scale that hasn't previously been documented. And we visited 25 different countries over a four-year period, recording those reef environments. But during this period, we had the start of the third global bleaching event. And this has been one of the longest and most severe coral die-offs in history. And we've seen reefs dying all around the world over this last three-year period. And certainly that has been sort of the big wake-up call for us as a team to now wanting to not just go from sort of recording reefs, but also to really work on the solutions for these issues.
Yeah, you're saying in the film Chasing Coral that in the last 30 years we've lost about 50% of the world's corals and coral reefs. 50%, that's half already in only 30 years. When you say bleaching event, can you explain that further? What's a bleaching event?
Yes, well, for the last sort of 30 years, the main issues have been sort of really on a local and regional basis. So this is pollution and overfishing have been sort of the two main drivers of coral reef decline. But now we've got the impacts of climate change coming through. And what we've done is we've heated the ocean to such a degree that corals can no longer cope with normal fluctuations in temperature. So in particularly hot years, they go beyond their tolerance and they've been dying en masse. And when you hear the words coral bleaching, what that actually is the coral animal it grows a plant cell in its flesh, and that gives it its color. And when the conditions get too hot, it has to expel those plant-like cells, and it becomes clear. And what you're seeing through the flesh of the animal is the skeleton underneath. And so when you hear at whole areas is bleached, it's actually the skeletons that you're seeing underwater. And it's one of the most spectacular, if not disturbing, sights in nature.
And you're saying skeleton as in, at that point, the coral has died?
No, actually, the flesh of the animal has turned clear, so you can see its skeleton, but it can recover from that.
Oh, it can.
If the conditions recover, the temperature drops down, and there isn't too much sunlight, and that drop in temperature happens fairly quickly, then the coral can recover. But if it is too severe, then what you find is the flesh of the animal disintegrates, and then the skeleton of the coral gets covered in algae. And very quickly, you just see a dead reef, which can then crumble apart.
Tell us about the new film, Chasing Coral, that you helped create. What's the film about? What story does it tell? How was it filmed? And it's from the same people, I just want to point that out, that created Chasing Ice, now Chasing Coral. And we had Chasing Ice on this show about a year ago, a couple of years ago. Amazingly talented filmmakers, of course. And the beauty that Chasing Coral, as we said, hardly seen before and definitely not available to 99.9% of people on the planet because they're not divers. It is breathtaking and almost alien-like in its beauty. It's like I was comparing it to a tropical bird sanctuary underwater, and you were alluding that to that beauty already as well. But tell us, what is Chasing Coral about? What story does it tell? How was it filmed?
Well, the story really came about, I was working on this project where we were revealing the coral bleaching, and I was flying off to a new location to record the bleaching there, and I watched Chasing Ice while I was on the plane, and I realized instantly that these two projects were very, very similar. So Jeff Orlowski, the director, had been documenting the disappearing glaciers over time in places like Iceland and Greenland, and showing the impacts of climate change on glaciers. But he told the story in such a way that it was almost an adventure with teams flying around the world to try and document this happening. And I saw our two projects as being very similar, where he was trying to document glaciers using time-lapse photography. We were trying to document the decline of coral reefs because of climate change. And so I contacted Jeff straight away, and I showed him two photographs, one of a living reef looking incredibly healthy, and one of a dead reef, which was due to the impacts of climate change. And he instantly saw the comparisons between the two projects. We met up a couple of times, and he's been following us with his team for the last 3 years, putting together this film.
Amazing. And of course, again, that Chasing Coral, now available on Netflix for anyone to see. Chasing Coral, an emotional journey under the ocean's surface. That is our topic in this hour here on Inorganic Conversation. And we are speaking with Richard Wevers, the founder and CEO of The Ocean Agency, theoceanagency.org, the website. Richard, stay on the phone with us. We'll take a quick break to honor our underwriters, and we'll be right back with so much more. This is an Organic Conversation, and I'm Helge Hilberg. This show is brought to you by Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. For more information on a degree in holistic nutrition or culinary arts, bowmancollege.org. And Fry Vineyards, America's first organic winery. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Award-winning wines at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. And thank you also to Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor of organic fruits and vegetables that has been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. From grocery store to company cafeteria to caterers and personal chefs, anyone can buy from Earl's Organic. Certified organic produce at earlsorganic.com. And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. Chasing Coral, a new documentary available on Netflix, is our topic in this hour. And we are speaking with the founder and CEO of the Ocean Agency, theoceanagency.org, Richard Vevers. Richard, in order to make the oceans relevant, let's talk about the importance of the world's reefs. Why are they critical in the ocean ecology and with that for us as humans, even living on land?
Well, I think most people look at reefs and they think it's always a beautiful environment that you go and have a look at when you're on holiday. And they don't think too much more than that about coral reefs. But 500 million people rely on coral reefs for food and income. So they're hugely important to societies all around the world. But also what's really critically important is they're essentially the nurseries of the sea and hugely important to all ocean life. Something like 25% of all marine life relies on coral reefs. So losing coral reefs at such a dramatic rate, now the fact that we've lost 50% in the last 30 years, is having a huge knock-on effect to the health of the oceans generally.
So when you say 25% of all ocean life and they are the nursery, what happens, what's the effect of dying reefs on the ocean's ecosystem?
Well, we've really been following the bleaching event. So a huge coral die-off around the world over the last 3 years. And some of the locations that we've been to have not just been to record the event as it's happening, but to go back and have a look at the aftermath. And one of the most shocking for me was going to see the Great Barrier Reef at a place called Lizard Island, which got really heavily hit back in 2016. And we jumped in the water there after the bleaching event, and as the reefs had already been covered with algae. So essentially you saw it looking as if it's been dead for years, the whole environment. And the first thing you notice is the lack of fish, because what happens is the structure of the coral provides the home for the fish. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it dies, that fish has lost its home. So it has to either go and try and find another home of healthy reefs. But if there isn't any other healthy reefs in the areas, it's just going to get picked off by larger fish. And what you find is the large fish pick off these fish and then they move on themselves. So you suddenly get an area that is almost devoid of all marine life. Mm-hmm. And it has just really transformed state from being a coral-dominated reef to an algae-dominated reef.
When you talk about the bleaching event, and you touched a little bit on the environmental consequences or the environmental impacts, in this case you mentioned the warming of the ocean, what else contributes to a bleaching event, or what would make sure the coral stay as healthy as possible? What else is happening in the oceans that is threatening the health of reefs?
The big threat to coral reefs now is climate change. Mm-hmm. And we know that we have a lot of heat built up in the system that is going to impact coral reefs for the next 20 to 30 years. The latest science indicates that we're going to lose about 90% of coral reefs globally because of the heat in the system, which is the biggest issue of all. But in addition to the issue of climate change, we've also got local pressures, so overfishing and pollution, which also have the potential to kill the reefs that could survive climate change. So really sort of coral reefs are at the very front line of climate change, but they're having to battles on all fronts at the moment. And that's really what we need to do is focus on protecting specific reefs that we know we can protect against climate change and protect them against the other issues that they're currently facing.
Yeah, we're talking about indicator species, right? If one species of animals goes, it's almost seems silly to call things indicator species because the world is at large is threatened. So it seems like there's almost no indicator species anymore. We are talking about every species, including human race, that is feeling and seeing the consequences of global warming and other environmental impacts, of course. But corals are a very visual, unfortunately, because of their beauty. If you then look at a dead zone, a year later, that's just an extreme change that's really extremely visible, of course. And again, Chasing Coral documents that really well, from this unbelievable beauty and iridescent color, the world of color underneath the surface, to, as you said, just an algae dead zone that doesn't even host fish anymore. So it makes corals, in that case, a really good species to show the extremeness of change. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, coral reefs are the biggest visual indicator of climate change. And when you consider that coral reefs have approximately a million species, one of the best analogies I heard the other day was coral reefs are the cities of the ocean, and the corals themselves are the buildings. So they build these incredible structures that then provide habitat for a wealth of marine life, from the smallest animals to the largest animals. When you have that collapse of the buildings, essentially you lose most of that marine life. And that's the sort of the tragedy of losing coral reefs.
When you say there's heat in the system, to even if we changed climate back, or if the oceans were to get cooler again, there's heat in the system for 30 years. What do you mean by heat in the system? Can you explain that?
Well, what people rarely realize is climate change is very much about the ocean. 93% of climate change heat is absorbed by the ocean. And we are committed to a certain amount of warming beyond where we were already. Due to sort of emissions that have already gone into the atmosphere, we will get continued warming for about the next 20 to 30 years. So even if we manage to stick to the Paris Agreement that has been, and the target set by the Paris Agreement of restricting global warming to 2 degrees centigrade with a target of 1.5 degrees centigrade, we will still lose the majority of coral reefs remaining because of that heat already in the system.
And we are not even sticking to, obviously, the Paris Agreement, as the current administration has pulled out of that officially. So you're saying with 90% of reefs predicted to be lost, which brings us to your organization, what's your prediction?
Well, I think we need to sort of wake up to the fact that coral reefs are very much on this front line of climate change. And we know we're going to lose 90% of coral reefs. So with that understanding, we now need to sort of really mobilize and make sure people, one, are aware of this issue and the seriousness of climate change, but two, really mobilize in the solution now. One of the great sort of good news stories that I heard a while back was that of humpback whales. And back in sort of 1950s, we got the humpback whale population globally down to 4%. And within a very short period of time, since we put a ban on hunting for humpback whales, that population has bounced back to 65% of its original numbers.
Yes.
And coral reefs are brilliantly adapted to be able to bounce back once we change the environment and stabilize the environment. So what we desperately need to do is make sure we focus our attentions on saving the 10% that can be saved and really bolster conservation efforts on those reefs. What we've done is launch a project called 50 Reefs. And this has had the support of Bloomberg Philanthropies, Tiffany & Co. Foundation, and also the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation, where we've got some of the leading scientists in the world together to identify the reefs which are least vulnerable to climate change, but also the most important for being able to reseed surrounding reefs. And the idea is when we have that list, which will be released in October this year, we will then be able to really bolster conservation and science efforts on those reefs. And that will be critically important to protect them from the other issues such as overfishing and pollution, to be able to buy them the time to survive climate change and being able to be the reefs that can repopulate the world.
Can you explain that further? So 50 Reefs, you're protecting specific reef areas independently of international or governmental oversight. What's the work with 50 Reefs? What do you do?
Well, 50 Reefs, we've currently got a group of the world's leading scientists looking at how we identify the coral reefs which are least vulnerable to climate change, but also the most important for reseeding other reefs in the area. So they are doing a scientific study at the moment. They all got together in Hawaii a couple of months ago and they'll be getting together again in Australia in 2 months' time, and then releasing this list, this scientific study, in October this year. Then the idea is, once we've got that list, we've also got a conservation team, which have pulled together all the leading conservation organisations. They gathered in New York last month to really work out what are the most effective strategies in each region for protecting these coral reefs. And then we've also got the communication team working with the likes of Exposure Labs, which are the team behind Chasing Coral, to really look at leveraging the fact that we've got the International Year of the Reef coming up, and an initiative now, which is a positive initiative, to save coral reefs.
Incredible. Which brings us, of course, to what can people do? So your entire career and focus is dedicated to bringing this topic and the beauty and the pictures, really visually, to a greater audience and make it relevant beyond the 0.1% of people who are actually diving. All these initiatives and 50reefs.org will help. That's 50reefs.org, the new initiative. But what can people do? What are you hoping the reaction will be from people? How can people support this?
Well, I think from my own personal experience, I wasn't aware of the issues facing coral reefs, even though I was a diver and a passionate diver. People are generally just not aware of what's happening in the ocean. So the first and most important thing people can do is really to get informed. And I think a great starting point is watching the film Chasing Coral on Netflix. You can watch it on a free subscription, so anyone can watch this with internet connection. And then once you become aware of the issue, sharing that story. So whether or not you're sharing it in social media, whether you're asking people or arranging a screening for the film, that could be one of the most valuable things that you can do. And certainly we're encouraging that on the chasingcoral.com website, is setting up private screenings of the film. Then beyond the awareness of the issue, it's really about climate action. We do need to keep to the Paris Agreement to be able to save coral reefs. That is essential. That's why I think coral reefs are so important, is because it is so black and white. If we don't stick to the Paris Agreement, we have no chance to save coral reefs. But if we do, then we can save coral reefs. And it's as simple as that. And so, therefore, it's about doing everything you can to ensure that you're part of the solution.
What would be your greatest hope that people would do? I understand the awareness part, and you as a former advertiser, of course, bringing people or showing people the issue and having them understand it and share it and just broadening the base is a critical first step. And then I always hope or wonder or look for a top 10 list of action items that people, you know, this show and Organic Conversation is listened to in 135 countries, 3 million people. If you wanted all of them or part of them to do what would it be?
I'd say get creative. I think climate change has always been portrayed as something negative, as in climate change action. It's always been portrayed as if we've got to clean up after a giant party, when really it's an amazing opportunity. When you look at what climate change action is actually achieving, it's about greenifying cities, it's about job creation, it's about wealth creation, it's about cleaning up pollution. There are so many positives that can impact people's lives on a personal basis in a very, very positive way. It's about becoming healthier through your diet. There are so many different ways that you can improve your life through climate action. And I think it's just waking up in the morning and starting to look at the opportunity of climate action, rather than thinking it is something that you really should do as opposed to want to do.
Fascinating for me, you as a former advertiser, even in the film, you were saying I was selling, you know, consumer goods through advertising, and I wondered what the meaning was. You're kind of touching on that for me again, the values of this life that we are living. And you had said earlier, the moment you remove the challenges, health will be restored. We have countless shows throughout the year on an organic conversation where we talk with holistic practitioners, people who work in the field of human medicine, as well as environmentalists, and they all share that same message. It's not about chasing health. It's about removing the challenges to health, because the natural state of the world and the natural state of our bodies wants to be health. As you were saying, the moment we reduce the obstacle, coral reefs will bounce back, or the humpback whale has bounced back. That's the message we have for most people here on the show when they say the moment you reduce, you know, unhealthy diets or lack of exercise, whatever is the challenge to your health, health will be restored. You don't have to chase health in that sense. And I hear that's what you're saying, even on a global level. It's not cleaning up after a party, but it's the greatest opportunity to actually recreate value for our lives and for the world, right?
Absolutely. And it is a very positive story on sort of both sides. I was lucky enough to dive on an incredibly healthy reef at the height of the global bleaching event. So this is the worst die-off in history on coral reefs, yet there's some reefs which are incredibly healthy and booming during this period, and because they're less vulnerable to the impacts. Mm-hmm. And we've also seen incredible recovery from other reefs that have been bleached in the past and bounced back because they've been protected on a local basis. So we know once the system is stabilized, reefs will bounce back and bounce back relatively quickly. And we also know that change is happening at an incredible rate when it comes to climate action. You've only got to sort of look out for those kind of stories and you see how fast things are changing. We've just got to get it to go a little bit faster. And that's really about everyone just starting to look at the opportunity and seeing it happening and being part of that solution.
Beautiful. In summary, because we're almost out of time, but such a beautiful interview. That's Richard Vevers, the founder and CEO of The Ocean Agency, Sydney, Australia. That's theoceanagency.org. And also the project 50 Reefs, that's 50, the number 50, 50reefs.org. Check it out. And Richard, how has your philosophy on life changed from if you look at your life as an advertising executive to now with the change of values and understanding of the world and obviously your inspiration and hope and fire and zest for life? Beautiful, your passion around reefs and really about life at large. What is your greatest personal awareness that or wisdom that you have found?
Well, I've been on a massive journey, and it's certainly changed me a lot in the last 5 years since we started with the Underwater Street View. I've been on this huge learning curve, which was at one point incredibly depressing because we were seeing the reefs dying but couldn't see a solution. Now, fortunately, we've come through that, and the optimism around getting effective climate action and also solving the issue of coral reef decline has been hugely optimistic over the last couple of years, especially. The number of partners we've now got on board with this project, that they're seeing this as a huge challenge, but an exciting challenge. And I think that's really what the sort of advertising background can also bring, is an exciting way of developing projects that allow us to bring these great partners like Bloomberg Philanthropies, Tiffany & Co. Foundation, the Paul G. Allen Foundation, and the likes of Google together to work on these issues together and to be able to allow the general public to be part of these initiatives as well. And that for me is the exciting part, is it's a huge challenge, but we need to see it as an exciting challenge, not a sort of standard conservation project.
So I hear everything you're saying, you are hopeful, yes?
Absolutely. I don't think we have a choice as a species to solve climate change. And we will do it rapidly because we have the technology, we have the money, we have the brains. It's just about the momentum. We will get there. And I believe at the same time we can protect coral reefs so that they can bounce back over time. So it's really just a case of pushing forward as fast as we possibly can.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for making time and all your incredible work. It's one of those areas, as we said throughout the interview, that if it doesn't get the airtime that 70% of the world being covered with water gets, we are missing 2/3 of what makes life possible and what makes life worthwhile and beautiful. and our life healthy in addition to that. So thank you for all your efforts to bring that to our attention, and so grateful that you had time today to be on the show and that we can do our part in it.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great talking to you today.
Yes, Richard Weavers, founder and CEO of The Ocean Agency. And are you're right now in the States, right? You're in Pennsylvania?
Yes, over in the States. And the plan is really to focus our work in the States, especially around the launch of Chasing Coral and the 50 Reefs Initiative.
Yes, that is 50reefs.org. Richard's organization is theoceanagency.org, theoceanagency.org. And the film, of course, is Chasing Coral. Good luck, Richard, in all your endeavors, and we'll have you back soon.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Richard Weavers here on An Organic Conversation, Chasing Coral, an Emotional Journey Under the Ocean's Surface. I am Helge Hellberg, and we're moving from the ocean on to land to sustainable agriculture. Here's the update from the San Francisco produce dock, the consumer segment of what to buy, how to buy it, how to store it, what to do with it, with Earl Herrick, the founder of Earl's Organic Produce, what you will find in the grocery store just next week. Here is What's in Season. And with me on the phone now is Mr. Earl Herrick, the voice of the organic movement, and of course the founder of Earl's Organic Produce, premier distributor of only organic fruits and vegetables for the Western United States. Earl, do we have you with us?
I am here. Still hot. It continues to be a real summer.
Finally, one must say, because we have surpassed the longest day of the year, and
yeah,
believe it or not, we are looking at fall. I mean, even though we're so in the summer that it doesn't really feel like it, but at this point, days are getting shorter already. So important to not forget that and to embrace what is. And what is? What's happening?
Well, you know, it was kind of a bombshell for some people, and for others, it was just other shoe falling when about 3 weeks ago or so, Whole Foods got purchased. For some folks, it was a pioneer, and for a lot of people, Whole Foods represented their introduction,
natural
buying organic
world, yeah,
into the alternative marketplace. But they got purchased by Amazon back in, you know, middle June, and that's a big deal. And I think it's a great thing because the beneficiaries, if done right, are the smaller retailers. You know, as you may have noticed, the theme over the years that, you know, you and I have been talking, Helga, is small is better, whether it's the size of the farm or the retailer, where you have so much more opportunity directly with your customer than you ever have, I believe, when you have a big, big outfit.
So when you say the big outfit, in this case being Whole Foods, and now being bought by Amazon, it will even further depersonalize the food system. So that's for the service of bringing organic foods to your home, which I guess that's what Amazon is in for. They don't just want to own Whole Foods. They want to deliver the segment Whole Foods offers to homes fairly soon. But you're saying that depersonalizes that segment of health food or natural food stores so much further that it will benefit the small store? Is that the logic?
Well, that's where I'm going. And I also think there's a lot of dynamics here. You know, I don't think we're going to see a lot of changes, you know, for a period
couple
of time,
years,
a year or two.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And what they do with this resource, I think, is multifaceted. But definitely one of them would be using their contacts, their actual buildings and
sure,
for the place of distribution. And there is convenience has its place. It really does. But the fact is, a smaller store is where you can go in, know everybody, know the person that's putting out your food, have a relationship with that person, have it be not so huge. I remember going into Whole Foods in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was down for spring training a number of years ago, and it was an airplane hangar. I felt completely out of sorts, and I'm a natural food guy. And I was completely disoriented. I was very uncomfortable. But you know, that's my story. But I think it can resonate for a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. And I just really feel, and this has proven to be true, when you have that small store, you get to know if you're really good. Again, I think you got to be very good, and you got to take up the challenge. But I don't think it's a white flag time at all. I say, great, let me hire some of these Whole Food people that are not going to be working here anymore. Let me get some people working for me that has some expertise. Let me start using their passion and their expertise and their interest and creativity to do a better job of what I'm doing.
And you're saying the convenience factor, totally true. It motivates many of us. It was the reason why we introduced TV meals and whatnot, ready to be made, whatever. And it's both is always true, right? Yin and yang.
Yeah.
It's always present. So that means that automatically offers an opportunity because it's not as personalized, obviously. You don't get to pick your own produce. You don't have a connection to the farmer.
Yep.
Amazon is too big to do that. So as the spectrum grows into that end, at the same time, it grows on the other end where people say, okay, I might get my weekly box or not, but I might get my weekly box from Amazon or Whole Foods now delivered for the basics, but I will emphasize purchasing the items that are really important to me, where flavor and whatever else, and for the relationship at my local store and make a point, and that's my community.
Well, I think the key word you used there was connect.
Mm-hmm.
And for many people, a store is a place where you connect. Yes, you do shopping and you do that vital connection there, but it's also about the community. You know the people there. You hear the gossip. You talk to people. I mean, this is the community in which you live and perhaps even work.
And beyond the store, right? I mean, the store owner might be your neighbor and I might live a block away from you. And if there's a community emergency or community festival, whatever it may be, that store is an active part. That person is an active part of that community. Not so with Amazon. Who knows where Mr. Bezos lives, and he doesn't, necessarily care for your or has an influence on your really little community there. So that's always true with the local coffee shop, the local health food store, or the local whatever it is, corner store, versus any kind of chain, right? Even with Whole Foods, that was already true.
Yeah, and part of the encouraging factor for me is the growth of farmers markets over the last 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out of the desire and the impulse to connect with your food, to understand how it's grown, from where does it come, having a relationship with a farmer and having him share his stories with the challenges and the passions that he has. I think the small store can represent that same features, though it will be challenging. But what a great place to have that challenge manifest,
right?
Because I think there is an audience out there that is absolutely just primed. I mean, I know I've gotten meals delivered here. I did that for about a month, a year or so ago, just to check it out. And there was definitely some convenience, but I couldn't even imagine having that be, the backbone and staple of my nourishment.
Yeah, of course, exactly. And the same is true. I mean, there are services now like Amazon. There's an entire spectrum always of box produce, home delivery. And I'm involved with Golden Gate Organics. That's goldengateorganics.com. And out of all these box delivery service, I chose them to be involved with because they emphasize first they buy from you. You have the closest connection to all small scale organic farmers. We get, blueberries that other grocery stores just simply don't have or other distributors don't offer because you have put 30 years of relationship building into it. And so extending that really as a kind of online farmers market where you don't, you're not going to the farmers market, but we're bringing the values of farmers markets as closely as possible, other than meeting the farmer himself or herself. We're bringing that to your door. That's the commitment of Golden Gate Organics. And so you're right. As Amazon buys Whole Foods, the local, the personal, everything on the spectrum between really buying from the farm directly or a farmer's market, where at least the farmer comes to your community, to having a box delivered where you don't know where anything is from, everything in the middle still lives and has a place and is important.
And the other feature that is so important is the whole education particle.
Yeah.
And certainly you can get that delivered with your box. Education is a big deal, and to be able to talk to your produce person and ask questions. They get to know you. They get to anticipate, you know, project, you know, hi, Mary, I got your mushrooms for you. You know, have you had a mango yet? You know, all the wonderful things that can happen that are truly relational.
Yeah.
And I think that is really the community and the relationships. That's really what feeds us as much as the food that we eat.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much. That's earlsorganic.com, the website for tips and recipes and what's in season. And yeah, great to talk to you. Talk to you next week.
Always great, man.
Thanks, Earl. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. And that was a beautiful hour on ocean and land. Chasing Coral, new movie, new documentary on Netflix, now available. And also the update from the world of healthy fruits and vegetables, what's in season. I'm Helge Hellberg. This is an organic conversation. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with another episode next week. Take good care. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you so much for listening. A big thank you also to our associate producer, Kristen Ponger. An Organic Conversation is made possible through listeners like you and the fantastic support of our underwriters. Equal Exchange, a worker-owned cooperative that ensures your food is environmentally sound and socially just. Equal Exchange has been creating big change for small farmers for over 30 years by offering certified organic and fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, bananas, and avocados. More on Equal Exchange at equalexchange.coop. And Utterly, offering beautiful and fun clothing for boys and girls that is made entirely from the unused fabric of prominent apparel manufacturers. Every garment reduces our eco-footprint by preventing this fabric from reaching the waste stream. Utterly, making sustainability fashionable and fashion sustainable. For more information, utterly.co. Also, Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor providing certified organic fruits and vegetables for your store, home, or business. Are you a chef? Have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? Anyone can buy directly from Earl's Organic at wholesale prices. The website is earlsorganic.com. And Fry Vineyards, America's first certified organic winery, producing organic and certified biodynamic wine without synthetic sulfites or other preservatives. Family-owned and operated since 1980. Fry Vineyards, Mendocino County award-winning wines. For more information, frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. Lastly, thank you as well to Bowman College, focused on holistic nutrition and culinary arts for over 20 years. Bowman College offers professional training programs that prepare individuals for careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Their website is bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org. If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to anorganicconversation.com or subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play so you'll never miss an episode. And for more information, health tips, recipes, and your daily dose of inspiration, find us on Facebook and Instagram at An Organic Conversation and on Twitter at Talk Organic. I'm Helge Hellberg, and we'll be back with another great episode right here, same place, same time, next week. See you then.